The views and opinions expressed here are those of the guests, and are not the official position of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
The Mormon Channel presents Into All the World.
The vision will begin to be fulfilled.
Our membership is found throughout the world.
The New Zealanders and the Australians.
Sono felice di servire il Signore.
Vietnam, Cambodia, Thailand, Burma.
Five new temples.
Ni kupitia kwa imani.
Go ye into all the world.
Today on Into All the World, we will be talking with President Paul Woodland and Sister Marilyn Woodland, who have recently returned from the Belgium, Brussels, Netherlands mission. The history of the church in Belgium. A convert from Turkey, Misha Marco, is likely the first member to arrive in Belgium in 1888. He preached to the Esselman family, and over several years, the entire family was baptized. Later, missionaries laboring in Switzerland and Germany were also sent to Belgium. Within 2 months, they baptized 80 people and organized congregations in Liege, Brussels, and Antwerp. During the German occupation of Belgium in World War II, members in six branches remained active. Work progressed slowly after the war. Today, members total approximately 6,000, many of them second, third, and fourth generation members of the church.
Welcome to Into All the World, where we discuss the growth of the church around the world. I'm Tim Taggart, and joining me in the studio today is President Paul Woodland, who recently returned from serving in the Belgium, Brussels, Netherlands mission. President Woodland served a mission originally in the France-Belgium mission, then received his MBA and became the CFO of Dreyer's Grand Ice Cream, and then the president of Hooked on Phonics. He and his wife have a son and daughter and five grandchildren, with another one on the way. And we really appreciate your joining us. Sorry that your wife, Marilyn, couldn't be with us, but...
She's taking care of family out of town.
That's the way
so
things go. Tell us a little bit, if you will, about the mission and about... kind of the area of the mission and what languages and other things are involved in this mission. Sounds like quite an international sort of experience.
Our mission included the northern part of France, mm-hmm. all of Belgium, and the Netherlands. And we had basically three different languages there. Half of Belgium down through France, of course, is all French-speaking. Brussels itself is split primarily into Flemish-speaking and French-speaking, mm-hmm. cut almost in half. Then the northern part of Belgium is Flemish, and then everything above that is Dutch.
Mm-hmm.
So we had – and I only spoke French and learned enough Dutch to be able to give talks in state conference and a few things like that.
Well, that's pretty impressive. So how did that work with the missionaries? Did they predominantly learn just one language and served within the area of that language?
We literally had two missions.
Mm-hmm.
We had 40% of our mission was French. They learned French in the MTC. Mm-hmm. They came over knowing French, and almost never, except for a couple experiences, did they leave the French side to go to the Dutch side. The Dutch mm-hmm. mission, which was 60% of our mission, they just learned Dutch. The Dutch speak a great deal of English,
mm-hmm.
so they were able to speak English occasionally, but we, of course, naturally said to them, no, speak Dutch and only Dutch.
Yeah.
But the two, with the exception of one conference we had with Elder Bednar, mm-hmm. never saw each other.
Interesting.
And when they came together, they were shocked to know that there was this whole group over here.
Well, I bet that was somewhat of a challenge for you and your wife as a mission president and companion to deal with kind of those differences.
It was very unique, and you had to constantly remember that if when you're referring to a city in France and you're sitting in Amsterdam, they have no idea what you're talking about and so forth. So it... we had to think very careful about that. And the council meetings that we would have with all the state presidents, of course, were unique because there were multiple languages spoken in the council. But we pretty much did that in English to make that work.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like a really interesting challenge. How is the work going in Europe and in your mission as far as the growth of the church and what's happening there?
That's probably the most exciting part of all. Europe began last year in turning from a negative growth rate to a positive growth rate.
Wow.
When we left, Europe itself was up about 6% in terms of baptisms. We were blessed and fortunate to be up almost 30% from the prior year. We had some missions in England and other parts that were just doing wonderfully. And what's happening, and it's really working through the members. Mm-hmm. It is the members who are really the key, as we've worked closely with them under the direction of Elder Perry, mm-hmm. to make sure that we were working very carefully to have the members assist us, to help us, and to be able to reach out to those who have been inactive for years who still have in the core of their souls a testimony of the gospel.
Wow.
And as we got into those families, we would find 2, 3, 4 children unbaptized.
Yeah.
And we'd baptize them.
That's wonderful. And that with that kind of growth, it brings more growth.
It does.
When people can attend baptisms and that sort of thing, it generates more excitement.
And the members would take them and fold them into their families. And we were really seeing a beginning of a change in mm-hmm. Europe that I believe will be a permanent and an important change long term.
That's significant. Tell us a little bit about an experience, a conversion experience or something that comes to mind from your mission.
Can I go back to this language change
please.
As I relate to you an experience? Naturally, there was a great joking that would go on around transfers about whether someone in the Dutch side or the French side would be transferred to the other side. And I had one sister that would always joke about that with me. And one transfer, I had this impression that I needed to send this sister, who was a French sister, up to a Dutch city. She knew not one word of Dutch. At the time, I have to say, as I had that impression, that I went back to my knees and said, "Are you sure?" And the answer was yes. And so I called her that night and said, "Sister, you're going to a city up in the Netherlands." And she laughed and she joked and said, "That's great, President. Now tell me the truth." And I said, "You're going." And she said, "Yeah, that's sure." And I said, "No, sister, pack. You're going." We went up there, sent her up there. And all along as she was going up there, my thought was, there's a reason. I don't know what it is. Unbeknownst to me, 2 days before the transfer, they had found a young lady who only spoke French.
Interesting.
And they didn't know how they were going to teach her. She had a few words of English that she could understand, but she only spoke French. And our French sister arrived there and immediately began teaching her. They taught her the gospel for 6 weeks of the transfer. And she concluded that she needed to be baptized and wanted to be baptized. But unfortunately, she felt a strong tie to her godmother, and who was of another religion, and she wanted her godmother to come and see her baptized and, in essence, give her the right to do that. But the godmother, for whatever reasons, didn't come initially. She was in another country, and the days clicked on and the days clicked on, and the sister returned to the French side of the mission, very hurting spiritually,
yeah.
Knowing that this wonderful French young woman needed to be baptized, but it hadn't occurred. We spent many times on the phone, and we prayed, and they fasted together that something would allow this godmother to come so it happened. And finally, one weekend, this sister called me and said, "President, what do I do? I've done everything in my power to be able to help her," Josie was her name, "to be baptized. She knows it's true. But I don't know what to do." And so we concluded that everyone involved needed to fast that weekend to find out something. We had done all we could do. It was left in the Lord's hands. Yeah. He was the only one who could make it happen. And as we fasted in that wonderful little ward that actually was an English-speaking ward, and she went there just because she didn't understand the Dutch and she could get something out of that, in walked one of the authorities from Portugal. And it was fast and testimony meeting. He got up to bear his testimony. He didn't know Josie at all. And he got up and bore his testimony of baptism and how he had had a conversion and how he delayed that conversion in the baptism. But he knew it had to happen. The Spirit bore absolute testimony to her that it was true and that she needed to act. She knew she did, and she couldn't wait for her godmother to do that. He went down in the congregation right after the meeting. She grabbed his hand, and he looked in her eyes and said in French to her, because he spoke a little French, that it was time for her to be baptized. Hmm. She called the sister in France and said, I will be baptized on Wednesday, the coming Wednesday. Hmm. Of course, naturally, the sister missionary called me, and she was in a threesome. So I told her to go immediately to the Netherlands, get with her former companion, mm-hmm. and to visit this young lady at least 2 to 3 times a day until she was baptized. And true to her word, on Wednesday, she was baptized. Wow. It was a remarkable experience.
That's terrific. You know, those experiences in which you see the hand of the Lord move, and to be a part of that as a mission president is one of the great experiences, and it occurs all the time.
It does. Yeah. It does. It's hard till you go on a mission to realize that you are nothing. You don't convert a soul, that it's the Lord who finds them, it's the Lord who brings them to you, and it's the Lord who makes it possible to happen. Yeah. And it's, you know, having been a mission president, how much it takes to help the young people to understand they have to trust the Lord and rely upon him.
Yeah. So much as it was a willingness to let go and to truly trust him.
That's right.
And to discover what that faith really means. You have to do everything you can. But when it's up to the Lord, miracles happen.
That's right. Can I tell you another experience?
Please.
In our mission, we had what we called a consecrated hour of finding. Every day, there would be 1 hour. Of course, they're all consecrated to the Lord. But we would really specifically work during an hour to know the night before where we were to be, mm-hmm. to make sure that we had an appointment with the Lord to be there, and to pray with all our hearts that we would find whoever was there. And two wonderfully faithful missionaries had just got on their knees late at night the day before to decide where they should be. And they concluded that they would go to a very small street in this one city. And as they went there, they saw that it was a small street that went into a large boulevard. And they said, gee, are we in the right street? This is a tiny little street. There's no one on the street. There's no one to contact. But they prayed about it again when they got to the street. And the feeling from the Spirit was, you must continue. Go through it. So they went down. They went down one side of the street. They went down the other side of the street. No one there. No one would talk to them. Nothing. Came to the end of the street and said, what do we do now? And, of course, they knew they had to pray. So they prayed again. When they opened their eyes, they saw a little mother with a stroller and a little family. They said, this is it. This is the family. You know, this is what the Lord had us for. So they drove all the way, or they ran down the street, probably scared her to death, I imagine. And she had no interest. Absolutely no interest, said, no, I don't want to talk to you. I have no interest whatsoever. So they came to the middle of the street and they sat down on this bench and decided that they needed to pray again to find out. And as they prayed, they finished and opened their eyes and a car pulled off of the main boulevard, drove down and stopped right in front of them. And the man in the car rolled the window down and he said, are you Mormon missionaries? And I said, of course. He said, can you meet with me? Well, what we all want is we go through that. And they said, of course, we'll come. He said, great. Come to my house tomorrow night. So we went to the house, sweet little family there. They began teaching. And about a third of the way through the lesson, he said, stop. I need to tell you why I asked you to come here tonight. And he told them that 9 years before he had taken the lessons, he came up to the baptism. He had a scheduled baptismal date. But he, for many different reasons, decided to not go forward with it. He'd been married. He had a couple children. And everything had gone wrong in his life. Mm. He was at the bottom of his potential worth in life. And that morning he had gotten up and he said, I have to feel what I felt 9 years ago. I don't know where these missionaries are. I don't have their card. I don't know how to get a hold of them. And then he just had this prompting that said, go back to where you saw the missionaries before. And so he drove back and he had met the missionaries 9 years before sitting on that bench on that street. And these two missionaries had listened. Hmm. And because of that, a miracle occurred in their lives.
That's amazing.
Incredible.
Elder Maxwell talked about coincidence of being Heavenly Father's method of micromanaging the universe. And there's a great example of that.
There are no coincidences.
Yeah. What a marvelous experience. And to be engaged with these young missionaries and wonderful people in this work. It's a marvelous thing. I'm Tim Taggart, and you're listening to Into All the World on the Mormon Channel. And today we're discussing missionary work in the Belgium, Brussels, Netherlands mission with President Paul Woodward. And we appreciate so much your experiences. Tell us a little bit about the makeup of the missionaries. Were most of them from the United States?
We were from 11 different countries. Hmm. We had 180 to 184 missionaries, 446 in our three-year period of time. Mm-hmm. We had missionaries from France itself mm-hmm. that came up. We had some Dutch missionaries from the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. Obviously, most of them came from the United States. We had missionaries from England. We had a missionary from Sweden who called me last night to tell me he was engaged, which was wonderful. We had missionaries from the West Indies. Mm-hmm. And we had missionaries from South America.
Terrific.
So it was from all – and Taiwan.
That's great.
Which was really fun.
And marvelous for them to have that experience with each other.
Oh, it was so fun to see – in fact, at one point, if I recall correctly, we had a Taiwanese missionary serving with a Swedish missionary. And what could be greater than that?
Well, you know, in so many ways, Europe is a melting pot anyway, and – it sounds like you had a melting pot among the missionaries.
We did. And the growth in Europe is largely because of this melting pot mm-hmm. that's occurring. We've often thought of the United States as the melting pot of the world, but it's no longer true.
Yeah.
It's clearly Europe. As you see people flowing in there from Africa, people from the Middle East, people from South America that come in, people from China. Can I tell you a story about this one Chinese missionary we had?
Sure.
He was from Taiwan, which means he spoke Chinese, mm-hmm. obviously. He had to learn English, which he had learned over there, so he could learn French.
Wow.
Because he was a French-speaking missionary.
Yeah.
But it became, in essence, his third or fourth language, and he was marvelous. He was this quiet, polite, sweet young man. And at one point, I invited him at the call of the Lord to come and be one of my assistants in Brussels.
Wow.
And he couldn't understand why he had been called to be an assistant and why he was there and what was happening. Shortly after he was there, he was walking down the street where the assistants lived and so forth and saw this Chinese woman. And naturally, it was his habit, if there was anyone Chinese, that he would contact them and make sure to do this. It was a wonderful woman that invited them to come up. And she later told me that she lived in an apartment way above the street, and she would watch often these missionaries, because they were assistants mm-hmm. who were there, and it was close to the mission office, obviously. She would watch them walk up and down the street, and she had a son and a daughter. And she would say to herself, and often said to them, "I want you to be like those two boys."
Interesting.
They're polite. They're clean. They're obviously have a purpose in life. I don't know what it is, but you need to be like them. She had talked to the missionaries many times, always turned them down, always not interested, even though she watched them very carefully. And this particular day, this Chinese missionary came up to her and in Chinese said to her, "Would you be interested in knowing about the gospel? Would you like to know how your family can have happiness forever?" And she remembered having said to her kids, "You need to be like them."
Mm-hmm.
So she said, "I want you to come up and I want you to teach me." They began to teach her about the plan of salvation, which obviously, given her background, she didn't have a lot of basis in and so forth. She began to understand why her two children needed something more than what she had. And because it was being done to her in Chinese, she suddenly began to open up her heart and to feel something that she had never felt before. Her son, I won't say who it was, but her son, he was a teenager like all teenagers and did not want to listen and was not interested and was doing his student and so on and so forth, and came within a week of his mother's baptism. Really didn't want anything, but he was in the room when he was being when they were being taught. But one of the statements of this Chinese missionary caused him to really think. And the day before his mother's baptism, he told the missionaries, I need to be baptized with my mother.
Wow.
And right now he is preparing to potentially be a missionary for the church. All because of one Chinese missionary that didn't understand why he was in France. And why he was in Brussels. But the Lord knew he had to save that soul. He saved several others, but he needed to save that soul.
Well, and the marvelous thing is it's not the end of the story.
No.
It's only the beginning of the story. There are many more generations of stories to be told, and the Lord knows them all. And he knows the people involved.
That's right.
And he allows us to be a part of bringing that all together.
That's exactly right.
Did you see some miracles happen in some of the companionships that occurred among the missionaries and the experiences that happened in companionships?
Oh, they're unbelievable. We had one missionary who, he was on the Dutch side of the mission, and his native tongue was French. And he struggled. He struggled incredibly hard. And he had a few issues that he was dealing with in his own life and made it very difficult. And every companion, he had to be changed every transfer because they just couldn't get along. And it was very difficult. And I was trying to decide with the Lord what the Lord wanted to do. Did he want to – was it a situation where he would potentially need to go home, or was it a situation where, frankly, he ought to be on the French side and use his language and have confidence with that? And I remember standing in front of that famous transfer board that we all stare at for a long time. And the assistants were with me, and we were trying to find out what did the Lord really want to do for this young man. And we were just agonizing over it. We had prayed over it so hard. As I turned from the board, there was just this thought that came like a bolt to my soul that said, you need to put him with two missionaries, and these are the two you need to put him with. And I remember turning to my assistants and saying, this is what we're going to do. Here are his two companions. And both the assistants said, are you sure, President? I mean, those are fabulous missionaries. This could really slow down the work for them. And I said, no, the Lord wants it done, so we're going to do that. 3 weeks later, I went up there. And this threesome had become an incredibly powerful, incredibly faithful missionary companionship. As I walked in there, they said, by the way, we really need to go help somebody who's quite sick, and we'll probably heal him. How's your faith, President? And the person who said that happened to be this young man who had had so many problems. He saw miracles. In fact, in 6 weeks, they had 8 baptisms, which in Europe is something. And as they went through that, he came to the point where he understood that this was the work of the Lord. His Dutch improved markedly because he understood it took faith to speak Dutch or any other language. Yeah. And he saw how miracles come to pass. He ended his mission. He was strong. He was happy. He went home as a powerful missionary.
And don't you feel sometimes that this is a work that's not just for the 2 years that they're out or the 18 months for the sisters, but it's a lifetime of preparation for leadership and responsibility and marriage and eternal families and those other sort of things.
We had 5 French missionaries, elders. We had several friends, but 5 in particular that came. And as they walked in to the mission in each of their individual situations, as I interviewed them the first time, I had this impression. They said, you better train these. You must train these because these elders are part of the leadership of the kingdom, and you've got 2 years to take care of them. Each of them, in fact, became either a zone leader or an assistant because of their own right of what the Lord wanted them to go through. And it was fascinating as I've watched them over the last year and a half where they've become young men's leaders. They've become counselors and bishoprics. They are literally what is becoming the fabric of the church and the leadership. And that's part of what we're trying to do.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a broad vision. And the Lord loves his children.
He does. And he takes care of them.
Yeah.
I had an experience Sunday. I will not mention this missionary's name. I was recently called as a stake president a few weeks ago. And six of my missionaries are in the stake.
Wow.
Which is a neat experience. I was visiting a ward meeting for their meetings on Sunday, and one of these missionaries got up to bear his testimony. And he explained that as he grew up, his relationship with his father was such that his father was relatively critical of him. And he had fashioned in his own mind that God was a God who was quite critical, loving, but critical of his children, and that there was very little that could be done that would be appreciated and so forth. So he came on his mission believing that he basically had a pretty tense, critical father in heaven. And he served with another mission president before we came in, then came in, and that point of view had not changed. And we have scheduled, as I'm sure all mission presidents do, an initial conference with missionaries. About a month and a half before we came out on our missions, I woke up early one morning with an impression. And the impression was that the first thing we needed to do when we arrived was to hug every missionary. I would do the elders. My wife would do the sisters. And I thought about it. I thought, why? You know, what is there about that? And unbeknownst to me, this missionary related in Fast Testimony Meeting, he said that one thing happened that completely changed my life. In that first conference, the mission president, before I said anything, came around and hugged every single missionary. And he said, when he came to me and put his arms around me and expressed love to me, it was the first time that I had ever had someone tell me he loved him. And for the first time, I felt that I have a loving Father in heaven. And he said, now I have a fiance that I'm going to marry shortly, and I can love her because I know I have a Father in heaven that loves me.
Hmm. By small and simple things.
By small and simple things.
Great things brought to pass.
That's right.
We've been speaking with President Paul Woodland of the Belgium Brussels Netherlands Mission. This is Into All the World on the Mormon Channel. I'm your host, Tim Tigard. President, this has been a wonderful experience.
Thank you.
And we'd love to have you conclude, if you would, by sharing your testimony with us. And then at the end of that, if you would, in French.
Okay. I'd be happy to do that. One of the greatest things we do in life is to serve a Father in heaven that we come to know. And I know that God lives. I know that Jesus is the Christ. And more than anything else, I know that he is my Savior. I've watched him save lives throughout this world. I've watched him change missionaries' lives. I've watched those who were hurting from pain suddenly have that lifted because of his atonement and his sacrifice. And I know more than anything else that this is the Church of Jesus Christ, that it is absolutely true. That Joseph Smith, in fact, did see God the Father and Jesus Christ. And anyone, and I invite everyone in this world, anyone that hears this broadcast, to get on their knees and ask if it's true. Because I know he will answer that. I know he will tell them that. Je sais que Dieu vit, que Jésus est le Christ. Je sais qu'il nous aime avec son cœur. Je sais qu'il veut que nous soyons purs et que nous puissions avoir l'occasion de retourner et de vivre avec lui pour jamais et pour toute éternité. Et je dis ces choses au nom de Jésus-Christ. Amen.
Amen. I'm Tim Tigard. Thanks for joining us from Into All the World on the Mormon Channel. For more information on this program or to see pictures of those who are interviewed, visit us online at radio.lds.org. Thanks for listening.
You have been listening to Into All the World.